Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
The True People's Radio.
Tom Hartman.
Now, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. And happy Friday the 13th to you. Mercury's retrograde, and it's Friday the 13th. Something for everybody to be paranoid about. Actually, it might be good news. According to the Dutch Center for Insurance Statistics, Friday the 13th has fewer accidents, fewer reports of theft, and fewer fires than any other Friday of the year. They actually did an analysis of this. So Bernie Sanders, it's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Bernie Sanders with us as always. Bernie, good news maybe? Happy Friday the 13th.
Friday the 13th, right. Fewer fires. All right.
Well, yeah, there you go. By the way, let me just mention sanders.senate.gov is your website. Ours, of course, tomhartman.com and airamerica.com. And the Tom Vision is up and running. You can find the link to it at tomhartman.com, or if you go over to airamerica.com on the Tom Hartman page. So,
well, Tom, let's follow
what's up with you, Bernie?
Website, because I want to mention something to the listeners. About a month ago, we published a small booklet. It was called The Collapse of the Middle Class, Letters from Vermont and America. And what that's about is that I asked people in the state of Vermont a couple of months ago to tell me what the collapse of the middle class meant to them in real life terms, in their own language. And we were stunned by the amount of letters that we received and the power of those letters, just from ordinary people who had thought that they were in the middle class, but suddenly found that all of their dreams and their hopes for their kids were just slipping right through their fingers. And we got some 700 emails on that subject. Then we asked people to tell us what these outrageously high gas and oil prices are doing, and we got 1,100 more. And we put some of the more poignant ones into a booklet, yeah, which people can find on our website, which is sanders.senate.gov. I think it's interesting reading, because it's one thing, you know, to talk about statistics and the collapse of the economy under Bush. It's another thing to hear how people who are in the middle of that collapse, what's going on in their lives. And it just kind of blows you away, and it makes you realize how this crisis hits people in ways you just didn't think. We got a letter, for example, from a woman who works in an oncology center. Okay? Well, what does that have to do with high gas and oil prices? Well, you know what? In a rural state, you got a lot of lower-income people who travel long distances to get chemotherapy and radiation. And you know what? They're having a hard time getting the therapy.
Wow.
Who would have thought of that?
Yeah, the booklet, by the way, I'm holding up a copy of our camera. We're videoing the show now.
Oh, okay.
people watching can see it. Anyway.
All right. So, you know, and people can pick up these stories. And it puts to a lie, I think, a lot of the mythology pushed by the Bush administration until at least a few months ago that, well, the economy is doing very, very well. It's robust. The fundamentals are strong. Unemployment is not that high. And the reality is that since Bush has been president, as I think most of the listeners know, the middle class has been collapsing. Median family income has gone down for working families by about $2,500. 8 million Americans have lost their health insurance. 3 million people have lost their pensions. And the only people, of course, who have done well are Bush's good friends in corporate America and the wealthiest people in this country. And we now have the obscenity of having the wealthiest 0.1% earning more income than the bottom 50%. And, you know, it's something, I was at a press conference the other day in Washington. These are issues the media in Washington almost never, ever deals with. Yeah. You know, they talk about the economy is strong. Oh, yeah, we got a problem here. The reality is the middle class in this country is collapsing, and we're looking at an acceleration in the gap between the very rich and not just the poor, but in everybody else. Now, one of the points made over and over again in the emails that we receive is that as bad as the general situation is, these high gas and oil prices have just made it that much worse and have kind of taken people over the economic edge. And this obviously applies to truckers who are now paying over $5 a gallon for diesel fuel, to workers who in rural states like mine, you know, are just having a hard time. Many of them can't afford to fill up their whole, you know, gas tank.
Right.
And, you know, if you're traveling 50 miles to work, you know, a good part of your paycheck has gone right into that gas tank. And what we are very worried about is the home heating oil situation in the Northeast. And we're going to work ferociously to make sure that, A, we expand LIHEAP, and, B, we do every – LIHEAP is the low-income heating assistance program that helps people with paying their fuel bills. And, B, obviously, that we continue to tackle and lower the price of oil and gas. That's top of my agenda. Meanwhile, while we are working on that, we can't forget the crisis in global warming and what is sitting out there. And here is some really good news. I get excited about it, is that while we have to deal with high gas and oil prices today, at the same time, we've got to transform our energy system away from fossil fuels and foreign oil into energy efficiency and sustainable energy. And I'll tell you something. I mean, and this is one of the key issues in this campaign. If Obama is elected, I believe we have a chance to really transform our energy system and create millions of good-paying jobs. There was a conference in D.C. just a couple of days ago where I had a staff guy go to. There are a number of companies now that have technologies for hybrid plug-ins where we should have cars on the road in the near future that are 150 miles per gallon. That's what we should be having. Now, why we don't have it already, I can't tell you why. It's beyond my belief that you have Detroit keep producing cars that nobody wants, and now people are waiting 4 months for a Toyota Prius.
Yeah.
Obviously, we should be producing these cars. There are companies now ready to produce electric cars. I've mentioned this before, but one of the sleeper technologies that does not get a lot of attention, there will be a hearing in Albuquerque, New Mexico, I believe on July 2nd that I'll be going to, dealing with solar thermal units. These are large electric generating power plants that get their electricity from the sun. They can produce as much electricity as a small nuclear power plant. 400,000 homes will get electricity from a plant that Pacific Gas and Electric is planning to build in Mojave Desert within the next couple of years. And there are 7 or 8 other projects online in the Southwest.
Yeah.
So there's all kinds of technology out there in terms of transportation, in terms of energy efficiency, LED light bulbs. Should be on the market within a couple of years for home use, which consume one-tenth of the electricity that incandescent light bulbs do. We should be producing wind turbines in this country, both large wind farms and small wind turbines. The potential is extraordinary, and I've been working with some success in the energy bill, trying to get the money to cities and towns to do these things and to enable universities to get some of the money, et cetera, et cetera. But the potential there is extraordinary.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, the Mojave Desert could be the next Saudi Arabia.
Absolutely.
The company that hosts our website, it's called Greenest Host, and they've got a little ad on our homepage at tomhartman.com if anybody wants to check them out, is, as far as I know, the only 100% solar-powered company hosting websites in the country. They've got a giant solar array out in the Mojave Desert, and that's what's powering their server farm. And they made the point in their ads that computer servers, these, you know, when you log on like Google and stuff, you know, or anybody's website, that computer servers around the world are consuming so much electricity that it's producing, that they're putting more carbon dioxide into the atmosphere than the entire U.S. airline fleet.
Wow, that's interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah, and so here's a company, as far as I know, the only one, Greenest Host, that is actually running their all their solar, their servers, 100% off electricity that's generated by the sun out on the California end, you know, on the edge of the Mojave Desert.
The potential is just unbelievable.
Yeah.
But what you keep having in the Congress and in Washington is tremendous power of the coal companies, of the oil companies wanting us to go the same old way, obviously, in Bush Cheney and these guys. But transforming our energy system not only helps us reverse global warming, cleans up the environment, it's going to create jobs.
Well, and entrepreneurial opportunities. I mean, here's Greenest Host. This is a little company. And, you know, I know the guy who owns a good chunk of it. He's a friend of mine, and which is one of the reasons that, you know, we got together and did this. And he's an entrepreneur. I mean,
right.
You know, he's
that's
a small
right.
businessman.
All right, the other thing that I want to say, the area that this week on the floor of the Senate, the Republicans, for I believe the 75th time, which is more than at any time in the history of the Senate, did another filibuster to prevent debate on efforts to lower the price of gas and oil. And two of the key components there were a windfall profits tax on the oil companies. And here's the story there. ExxonMobil in the last 2 years has made some $80 billion, more money than any corporation in the history of the world. Since Bush has been president, the large oil companies have made some $600 billion in profit. They are not using that money, despite what they tell
billion
you.
With a B?
B, billion.
Wow.
We don't talk about millions in Washington.
Yeah.
B, billion.
Yeah.
$600 billion since Bush has been president. And what they are doing is using most of that money to buy back their own stock and drive their stock prices up. That's what they're
right.
doing.
And pay their executives very well.
Let us almost know. As much as you make, I bet.
Yeah, right. In my dreams. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie Friday. And Bernie will be taking your calls at 866-303-2270. We'll pick up your calls right after this. Sanders.Senate.gov, TomHartmann.com, AirAmerica.com, our websites. 16 minutes past the hour.
Tom Hartmann.
Speaking the truth that multinational corporations don't want you to know.
This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
The hour, our Brunch with Bernie hour on the Tom Hartmann Program here on Air America Radio. Senator Bernie Sanders with us, the independent senator from Vermont, neither a Republican nor a Democrat. When he was in the House of Representatives, he's the longest serving independent in the history of the House of Representatives, now doing a great job in the U.S. Senate and taking your calls as he's done on this show for years and years now every Friday. Bernie, ready to hit the phone lines here?
Ready to go.
Okay, great. Let's see. Trying to figure out where. Here we go. Lou in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Hey, Lou, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Mayor, good morning, Tom. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning, Lou.
Oh, incidentally, Senator, you are my hero.
Thank you very much.
And I'm an old man, but you're still my hero. I'd like to ask you two questions. Now the Supreme Court has ruled on this, on the habeas corpus. Do you think they'll get around to the Patriot Act or the executive order that Bush put out concerning the control of the National Guard? And those are the questions, right? I'd like to make a suggestion. The name John K. Cooley, July 21st, 2001, an article he wrote for ABC News called Trading with the Enemy. It might be interesting reading.
Okay.
And I'll let you go and listen on the air.
Okay.
And I appreciate you.
Thanks
okay.
a lot, Lou. Thanks a lot.
Well, what Lou is talking about, obviously, is the Supreme Court decision yesterday on the Military Commissions Act, which, by a 5-4 vote, ruled that habeas corpus is, in fact, alive and well in the United States of America under the Bush administration, despite the Bush desire to do otherwise. And what they said, you know, it is so elemental, and we hope that every sixth grader in America understands what the Constitution is about, is that you can't just seize somebody and lock them away and not tell them why they are in prison, not provide legal help to them, not give them a chance to defend themselves.
Yeah, this is what habeas corpus means.
Right, this is the essence of the American jurisprudence system. And Bush, of course, does not believe that. He just locked these guys away, and that was that. And not only is it an assault on our own Constitution, equally important, it is one of the reasons why we are increasingly despised all over the world by countries. And the reason why that's so important, it's not that our feelings should get hurt, that people around the world don't like us. I remember I was in Morocco some months ago. And the guy there who's the ambassador, Republican fellow, nice guy, Republican appointee by Bush. I said, tell me, how do the people there feel about Bush? He said, well, last poll, I think he said they were 13% approval rating. This is a moderate Muslim country.
Wow.
And that's going on all over the world. So you can't go about talking about justice and democracy and freedom, which the president does every day, and then throw a bunch of people in jail and lock the door. And so this was a welcome Supreme Court decision. Lou asks, can we go forward on even more of the attacks that Bush made on our constitutional rights? And I certainly hope so. I was one of the relatively few people in the House to vote against the USA Patriot Act. And again, that's what this election is about. The election is about to say that, yes, of course we're concerned about international terrorism. We're going to do everything we can to protect America. But we can and must do it in a way that maintains the basic constitutional rights that make us a free country. So Lou asked a good question, and I certainly hope that we will go forward under a new president in doing away with many of the attacks that Bush made on our constitutional rights.
From your lips to God's ears, Bernie. Peter in Kentucky, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Good morning, Senator Sanders, and good morning, Tom.
Morning.
Tom, I have been listening to your show for 4 years, and it's my favorite program on radio.
Thank you.
I have a comment and a question, please, for Senator Sanders. My comment is, I'm a truck driver, and I travel the entire United States, and I don't understand why the southeastern quadrant of the United States could not be the energy-generating sector for this country. Endless supply of sunshine, desert, and wind power.
You mean the southwest?
Which could be supplemented by tidal power in New England,
mm-hmm.
as is happening in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And are you still there?
Yes, we're here.
And I have a comment, please, a question, actually. For the last 10 or 15 years, efforts have been made to pass legislation that would mandate the installation of APUs on trucks, auxiliary power units, which would save billions of dollars and billions of gallons of diesel consumption. And this legislation has never been passed, and I was wanting to ask why that might be. Is it possible that special interests have blocked the legislation?
Can't give you a definitive answer on your last question. Is it possible that special interests block legislation? Peter, that happens every single day in the United States Senate because the special interests have just enormous power. All that I can tell you is we are behind, even on such simple issues as demanding the cars in the United States get strong mileage per gallon. We are way behind Europe, China, Japan. We did manage, against tremendous opposition, to raise the CAFE standards from 25 to 35 miles per gallon. That is not enough. And we'll deal with some of your other questions when we come back from the commercial.
Great. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Bernie Sanders taking your calls at 866-303-2270. TomHartmann.com, AirAmerica.com, Sanders.Senate.gov. Stick around. We'll be right back. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Especially with people like Bernie Sanders in the U.S. Senate. Bernie, you wanted to wrap up your answer to the question?
Tom, Peter made the point he thought the South, I'm not sure if he meant the Southeast or the Southwest, could produce so much energy. He is absolutely right. And I know, and you know, that these are very tough times in this country in so many ways. Our healthcare system is collapsing. We're in a war in Iraq, and we're not producing the kinds of energy in our own country that we should be in sustainable forms. But what I want to tell people is, I, for one, am optimistic because sitting in Washington, D.C., I see tens and tens of billions of dollars being spent in areas where they should not be spent, and the potential, if we invest intelligently, to transform our country. Let me just give people a couple of examples. We have gotten a number of calls over the years on the healthcare crisis, right? I'm sure you get them every day.
Sure.
Tom, for $3 billion, which is 1 week in Iraq, let me repeat, 1 week in Iraq, we could build hundreds of federally qualified health centers, community health centers all over this country, which essentially would provide primary health care, dental care, mental health counseling, low-cost prescription drugs to every man, woman, and child in this country. What do you think?
Yes.
1 week, 1 week
one
in
week.
The war in Iraq.
Yeah.
If we invested in sustainable energy, if we invested in mass transportation, if we invested in our infrastructure, instead of giving tax breaks to billionaires, we can create millions of good-paying jobs. We could make sure that every kid in this country who has the ability can go to college without going deeply into debt. And people say, oh, this is utopian thinking. You can't afford to do that. Of course you can afford to do that. Instead of paying $12 billion a month for the war in Iraq, instead of spending $515 billion a year on top of that on military spending, much of that wasteful and fraudulent, instead of giving tax breaks to corporations who don't need it, that's what we can do. So I don't want people to get overwhelmed and pessimistic. We can do it. We can transform the country if we get our priorities right, which is why this election is so terribly important.
Yeah, we just need the right representatives in leadership. Brian in Anderson, South Carolina, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Good afternoon, guys. Hey. My question and kind of a comment, the solar power and wind power, those ideas are extremely, you know, those are great ideas, but every time it's brought up, those are, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 years down the road. I was just curious to find out what Congress is actually doing right now to help people out today.
Good.
Guys can't, you know, continue to pay $4 and $5 a gallon for gas. Yet every time an idea is brought up in Congress right now, the Republicans pull a filibuster and just walk out, and they just decide not to talk about it. And just in my eyes, it seems that absolutely nothing is being done
Good.
For the man today.
Okay, Brian, thank you very much. That's an excellent question. I disagree with you a little bit, but in one respect. You're going to see some of these solar plants up and running within a couple of years. If we had our act together, we could move quite rapidly. But you asked the right question. People are hurting today, paying $4.10 for a gallon of gas, as I mentioned earlier. Our people are scared to death in the Northeast about the cost of home heating oil next winter. The bill that came up just this last week, and I was one of the people in the Senate who pushed it, did a number of things to get some immediate relief, because Brian is quite right. We need to act right now. What we said to the oil company is, you are enjoying record-breaking profits. In some cases, you're paying your CEOs $400 million a year in compensation packages. We're going to impose a windfall profits tax on you. And there's two goals in that. Number one, to bring in some revenue for sustainable energy, but also to wake the oil companies up and to tell them they can't continue to rip off the American people. You know, Tom, we take so much for granted the incompetence of this administration. You would think that if you had a normal president, what would he have done a month or 2 months ago? He would have brought the entire oil industry into the Oval Office and said, hey, guys, the American people can't afford these type prices. Do something about it.
What's going on?
Or else.
Yeah.
Not a hint in a million years that he would do that. All right, that's number one. Number two, let me tell Brian that I, among many others, have been looking at the whole issue of speculation. This is a very complicated issue. There are about three people in the world who understand energy economics. I mean, it's very complicated stuff. But we have heard testimony from some very knowledgeable economists who suggest that between 25 and 50% of the cost of a barrel of oil today has to do with speculation. And some of the people who told us, maybe in self-defense here, were the oil industry themselves.
Sure.
And they came forward and said, look, yeah, we know the price of oil is $135 a barrel. That's not us.
Right.
You know, it costs us a certain amount to produce it, but it ain't $135. Take a look at speculation. Now, this is what we do know. We know, Tom, that in recent years, We have seen companies like BP, British Petroleum, put some control the propane gas market. We have seen Enron control electricity in the West Coast. We have seen control over natural gas by a hedge fund.
Right.
So these are not new ideas to suggest that maybe you have speculators who are bidding up the oil market for their own self-interest. And that is an area that we are looking on right now. And there's, the problem is a lot of the trading in oil futures is now below the radar screen. It's not transparent. Mm-hmm. And one of the efforts that we are trying to make is re-regulating energy trading. So there's, to answer Brian's question, some of us know what's going on in the real world, and we know how much people are hurting, and we know that while we've got to work long-term on sustainable energy and energy efficiency, we've got to work today to lower the price of oil and gas. And so looking at a windfall profit tax and getting into the issue of speculation are two of the areas that we're working on.
Yeah, very good. Howard in Los Angeles, listening on K-Talk. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, hi, Tom. How are you, Senator? Good to talk to you. Quick question for you. I was wondering why, given all the market share and market power that the oil companies have and the apparent collusion, I was wondering why the Sherman Act really isn't being enforced.
Ah, good question. Well, in this case, it's not only oil where we've seen fewer and fewer companies controlling more and more of the industry. It is most industries in this country. And if you look at agribusiness, if you look at financial services, what you see in recent years is merger after merger and more control of industry by a handful of very powerful players. The caller, Howard, asked, why hasn't there been antitrust activity?
Right.
And the answer is George W. Bush is president. Dick Cheney is vice president. That's not what they do. Their job, and they're doing a great job at it, and we got to give these guys credit. Their job is to represent corporate America and the very rich. And since they have been in office, corporate America and the very rich have done very, very well, middle class.
Well, really, since Reagan came in, he was the guy who essentially suspended enforcement of the Sherman Act, which led to the whole mergers and acquisitions mania, and these M&A artists, which we'd never heard of before.
Right.
And it's just
now, that's
been like
exactly
that ever since.
I mean, and I, you know, there was a speech that Obama gave recently. I think taking note of this is that in a democratic civilized society, government has a very important role to play. And that is, we cannot allow a handful of greedy institutions. And the culture of corporate America today is absolute greed. They would sell out this country in 5 minutes. They throw workers out on the street, move to China, prop up an authoritarian government there. They would go to bed with Saudi Arabia as long as they can make a buck. And it is the responsibility of the United States government to represent the people of this country to fighting for dignity and a decent standard of living for the middle class. And to do that, you have got to stand up to corporate America, which today has so much power, not only economic power. When these guys make billions of dollars, they don't put their money under their mattress. They use it, among other things, for lobbying, for campaign contributions, for advertising, and they're spending huge sums of money doing that. You know, we have been talking today a lot, obviously, about outrageously high gas and oil prices. The oil industry has spent hundreds of millions of dollars in lobbying, in campaign contributions. And that's what these guys do.
And we see the ads on, I'm watching the news on CNN, and I see an ad for a company selling oil drilling rigs. And it's like, why are they advertising an oil drilling rig? Like, I'm going to pull $400 million out of my back pocket and put one up in the Caribbean. If it's not to influence the news by
right.
saying, hey, we're a big advertiser. You don't want to mess with us.
I didn't see the ad, but I'm told my colleague Claire McCaskill from Missouri was on the floor yesterday, I think it was, talking about it. Not only one, but two full-page ads in the New York Times by ExxonMobil,
yeah.
which cost a pretty penny, by the way, that we're paying for at the gas pump.
Yeah.
So, it you know, these guys have – the amount of money they have is literally beyond belief.
People and the advertising is tax-deductible. It's a business expense.
So the answer is these guys have huge power, and the political issue of the moment, of our time, is whether the American people and the Congress and a good president can take these guys on. That's the struggle that we face.
There you go. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. Brunch with Bernie. Back with your calls, 866-303-2270, sanders.senate.gov, tomhartman.com, however you spell it, will get you there, and airamerica, of course, .com, and the Tom Hartman page there. 45 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
For the hour, welcome back. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. By the way, Bernie, before we go to the next call, something I just wanted to share with you. One of the folks in the chat room, Cisnerica, just reminded me of it. We had Congressman Peter DeFazio, who I know is a good friend of yours, on this show a couple of days ago from the Democrat from Oregon. And he said that there's all this sturm and drang about the oil companies wanting to have leases for ANWR. You know, they want to open up more sites to drill.
Right.
He said that of the 10,000 leases, more or less, maybe it's a little more than that, that have been granted to the oil companies over the last decade or so, the vast majority of them have not been explored. They've got all these oil leases all over the place, including
Alaska. That's right. And there was just a press conference in the House yesterday. We'll be working on it in the Senate, which makes the same point. I think there's something like 33 million acres of federal lands onshore and offshore available. The vast majority of them have not been utilized.
Right. So it's like they're sitting on this stuff.
Right.
You know, which gets us back to the...
And by the way, DeFazio is one of the best in the House and is just consistently does a good job in these issues.
I absolutely agree with you. Bill in St. Louis, Missouri, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Good morning, gentlemen. Enjoy your program.
Thank you.
Bernie, what I was curious about is this farm bill that was just passed. I have a question, and I'm going to give you my comment first. I'm a true Democrat all the way, but I really resent the fact that here we are paying more for higher food price, and I know it's hard to justify sending tax dollars to support farmers who make as much as $1.5 million a year. I mean, that's...
All right, Bill, let me say this. Okay, thank you
What's
for the
good
question.
About the bill?
Okay, Bill, hang on there, because here's the story. Right now, it is, as most listeners know, very, very, very difficult to get anything passed in the United States Senate. What the media has picked up is this one particular outrage, and I share it with you. I can't defend, do not want to defend, do not believe that wealthy farmers should be getting subsidies from the American people, period. It's wrong. But what you have to understand is that to pass a bill like that, enormous compromises have had to be made. Now, in that bill, do you know where most of the money went? This is not a bill. It should be renamed, by the way, because it's not necessarily a farm bill. It's mostly a nutrition bill. Most of the money in that bill went to expand the food stamp program, nutrition programs in school, efforts to finally increase funding for those people who are having a hard time feeding their families.
So the Republicans' price for allowing progressives to have that was that they wanted to make sure that fat calf farmers got their share.
That's true, but let me also say there were some Democrats involved in that as well. So I don't want to blame all of that on the Republicans. But what I do want to say is the media picks up on that.
Yeah.
But the reality is this bill, and Tom Harkin of Iowa did a very good job on it, dealt more significantly with hunger in America than any bill in recent history. So it's a long bill. It's a complicated bill. There are a million titles to the bill. But ultimately, I voted for it because I thought the good in that bill was a lot better than some of the problems. Bill pointed out appropriately enough one of the problems.
Yeah, okay, good. Skip in Seattle listening on AM 1090. Skip, you're on the air with Bernie Sanders.
Thank you, Senator, for your service, and Tom, for your service to our great country. Senator, I too am optimistic, and I'm very hopeful that a sea change is about to hit America with our new GI Bill.
Right.
And I believe, if I'm correct, sir, and correct me if I'm getting the story wrong, because I just briefed the University of Washington's think tank this week, on the proposal that's in compromise committee right now.
Yes.
And that $5 billion, if appropriated on either the supplemental or in any other way in the future, enables 800,000 new veterans since 9/11 to enter college in August of 2009, which realistically wouldn't be till January of 2010, by the time that they would enroll and get their paperwork processed and get certified to get in there. That's going to be a tremendous sea change for higher education, isn't it, sir?
That is, you're exactly right. Now,
80,000 new students?
I don't have the number in front of me, but that sounds right. I don't have the exact number. What it does, here's the goal of that, and you're absolutely right. And Senator Jim Webb of Virginia deserves a lot of credit for a Vietnam vet. Here's what we're saying. We all remember, and I think, Tom, am I correct to remember that your dad took advantage of the GI Bill?
Oh, yeah, that's how he went to college. Well, he didn't end up graduating because my mom got pregnant with me, but that's the two years he spent in college, that was on the GI Bill.
There are, I don't know how many people I talk to all over this country who say, my dad, you know, was able to do well in his life, live in the middle class, become a doctor, because of the GI Bill, which gave those people after World War II the opportunity to go to college who never would have the finances to do that. Over the years, what has happened is the GI educational grants significantly declined in terms of the percentage of the cost of college. And what we're saying now is we should treat the veterans who served in Iraq and Afghanistan and elsewhere since 9/11 the same way we treated the World War II vets, and that is make college available to them, pay all of the cost. And Skip is absolutely right. This will benefit not just the many hundreds of thousands of veterans. It benefits our entire nation because we are going to have people getting an education at a time when we need an educated workforce who otherwise might not have. So I am enthusiastically in favor of this. We have strong bipartisan support in the Senate on this, and I believe in the House as well. It passed with very large numbers. Our friend in the White House, who is prepared to give huge tax breaks to billionaires, worries that this costs too much. But I think with an election coming, I think his Republican friends will tell him to get on the train and move this thing. So I think we've got a good chance to pass it. I agree with Skip. This is enormously important, and we're going to do everything we can to make it happen.
And this is – Senator McCain voted against this, did he not?
I believe
– Or he did not vote? I don't remember.
To the best of my knowledge, he has voiced his opposition to this bill. That is correct.
Yeah,
yes.
That's got to be something that's going to come back to haunt him in the fall.
Well, I think so.
Yeah. Senator Bernie Sanders, sanders.senate.gov, Bernie's website. He's got a great newsletter over there. Check it out. Bernie, thanks so much for being with us today.
Good to be with you, Tom.
It's always wonderful. We'll see you next week. Our Brunch with Bernie Hour coming up next. I want to get into the Supreme Court decision. I've read the thing all the way through. I want to share some of my thoughts on that. And then Anything Goes Friday. We'll be taking your calls on any topic you want. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Call Tom at
866-303-2270. Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
The True People's Radio.
Tom Hartman.
Now, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. The Supreme Court issued this decision yesterday. And what is mind-boggling about this thing, and as I said a little earlier, I've read the thing all the way through. In fact, the Supreme Court of the United States, it is... I don't know how many pages it is, because actually the sections are broken. It's a couple hundred pages. And bottom line, and I just want to go through some of the language that's in it. The bottom line is that there's this thing called habeas corpus, which basically means that you have the right, and it's not only enshrined in the Constitution, by the way, in two different places the Constitution mentions it, that the suspension clause, the famous suspension clause, that the writ of habeas corpus shall only be suspended during times of insurrection or invasion. Okay. But it's also embodied in the 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th Amendments to the Constitution, which basically give you the right to not speak against yourself, the right to bail, the right to a fair and speedy trial, the right to confront your accusers. Arguably the 4th Amendment as well, it falls into the writ of habeas corpus. And so the Military Commissions Act, and before that the Detainee Treatment Act, these two pieces of legislation that the Bush administration has made the cornerstone of their assault on civil liberties, were at some level decided yesterday. And what's fascinating is the logic that was used here. The majority, 5 members of the court, Kennedy being the swing vote, the guy who sometimes goes conservative, sometimes goes American. In this case, he went American. Concluded that, A, the writ of habeas corpus cannot be suspended except if we're invaded or there's an insurrection, like, you know, during a civil war or during an invasion, you know, pretty clear. And B, that we've had this lease with Cuba since 1898. It's been incorporated at law since 1902 in its most recent form. And we've continuously occupied Cuba for 100 years for this part, Guantanamo Bay, this part of Cuba. And we control it. And the argument of the Reich in this thing, the argument of the Bush administration, was that Cuba's a sovereign nation. And because Guantanamo Bay is in Cuba, and our contract, our lease with Cuba from 1902 says, identifies it as a sovereign nation, because this is on Cuban property, the writ of habeas corpus doesn't apply to the American government there. Might apply to the Cuban government, but not to the American government. And it's like, you know, splitting hairs on steroids. And by that logic, by the way, John McCain would not be able to run for president of the United States, because that would mean that the Panama military base in the country of Panama, where he was born, was not American territory. Or some would argue. The Supreme Court doesn't obviously address that issue. But I'm going to work backwards from the end to the front of this thing. This is incredible. Scalia, first of all, dissents. And he starts out, and this is, I'm working backwards from the end of the decision toward the front. He says, in sum, all available historical evidence, I'm quoting Scalia here, points to the conclusion that the writ of habeas corpus, this, your right to face your accuser, your right to have a trial by jury, your right to a speedy trial, would not have been available at common law for aliens captured and held outside the sovereign territory of the crown. Okay, he's talking about the history of the writ of habeas corpus. And again, he's asserting that Cuba is outside our territory, therefore it doesn't matter. In fact, on page 7 of his dissent, he says, the air base at Guantanamo Bay, located within the sovereign territory of Cuba. And he goes on to say the court admits that it cannot determine whether the writ historically extended to aliens held abroad, and they couldn't find a basis for that. He says, if so, the court has no basis to strike down the Military Commissions Act. In other words, Cuba is Guantanamo Bay. Even though we control it, even though we have a lease for it, it's not part of America, and therefore this doesn't apply there. But here's the most bizarre thing of Scalia's dissent. This is where he started his dissent. The opening paragraphs. I am quoting Antonin Scalia. This guy, he is not a judge. This guy is a political hack. Listen to the language here. America is at war with radical Islamists. That's his opening sentence. Really, I don't recall Congress having declared a war, Justice Scalia. He goes on to say, the enemy began by killing Americans and American allies abroad. And he goes through this whole list of, you know, the attack on the coal and all these things. And then he says, it has threatened further attacks against our homeland. Against our homeland. I mean, he's using this word, too. I got to tell you, the homeland word was something that Hitler brought into the German vocabulary. And just think back to before 2001. Did you ever hear the United States referred to as homeland? Never. We didn't use that word in the U.S. because it was a Nazi term that was used by Hitler to he talked about this in Mein Kampf, that he wanted to give the German people a sense of individual racial identity. It was a word that he had borrowed from the Zionists of the late 18th century, and he thought, okay, they're working for a Jewish homeland. We should have a German homeland. And Rudolf Hess introduced this word. In German, the word is Heimat. And Rudolf Hess, in 1934, at the Nuremberg rallies, the first big, huge, massive, the one that, Leni Riefenstahl enshrined in her movie. This was the first time that word was used in Germany rather than Vaterland, the fatherland, which historically has had Germans refer to Germany. And here's Rudolf Hess. Notice he says, Dank Ihren Führer, thanks to the Führer, now in this time, as I recall the translation, Germany has become a homeland, a Heimat. Deutschland is a Heimat for all us Deutsches all over the world, for all Germans all over the world. In other words, any German can come back here. Here's Rudolf Hess.
Dank Ihrer Führung wird Deutschland sein Ziel erreichen, Heimat zu sein.
Heimat zu sein.
Heimat zu sein.
Für alles alle Deutschen Deutsch der in der Welt.
Alle Hitler! Die Hölle! Die Hölle! Die Hölle!
So, back to Antonin Scalia. It has threatened further attacks against our homeland, our Heimat. One need only walk about buttressed and barricaded Washington or board a plane anywhere in the country to know that the threat is a serious one. Oh, really, Justice Scalia? The fact that we're having a hysterical dog and pony show at our airports and that you guys are frisking us, can't even walk into the Capitol anymore like we could for 200 years, that's proof. Your hyperreaction is proof that we are in constant danger and therefore we should suspend the writ of habeas corpus. He goes on to say, our armed forces are now in the field against the enemy. Actually, according to the Pentagon, Justice Scalia, the majority of attacks on us are not coming from Al-Qaeda. They're coming from Iraqis who want us to get the hell out of their country. Anyhow, our armed forces are now in the field against the enemy in Afghanistan and Iraq. Last week, 13 of our countrymen in arms were killed. The game of bait and switch that today's opinion plays upon the nation's commander-in-chief will make the war harder on us. It's not a war, buddy. It's an occupation. Anyhow, it goes on to say, it will almost certainly cause more Americans to be killed. This is in a Supreme Court decision. Or actually in the dissent from one. It's just mind-boggling. John Roberts, the $2 million a year corporate lawyer whose main job, aside from tutoring the lawyers who... Because he used to clerk for Rehnquist, the lawyers who argued Bush v. Gore before Rehnquist, besides tutoring them on how best to pitch Rehnquist. Here's John Roberts in his dissent saying, at the very end of it, he says, so who has won? Not the great writ, the writ of habeas corpus, whose majesty is hardly enhanced by its extension to a jurisdictionally quirky outpost. That would be Guantanamo. Not the rule of law, unless that is meant the rule of lawyers. And certainly not the American people, who today lose a bit more control over the conduct of this nation's foreign policy to unelected, politically unaccountable judges. No, sir. The American people have recovered the Constitution. Your right-wing buddies have lost a little bit of control. That's the case. Roberts, in his dissent, he says, the court's hand-wringing over the Detainee Treatment Act's treatment of later discovered exculpatory evidence is the most it has to show after a roving search for constitutionally problematic scenarios. And it's just the court's hand-wringing? They're not wringing their hands. They're saying, we're going to enforce the Constitution. It's what in Mabry versus Madison in 1803, the court, under arguably one of the most conservative justices in history, said the court is supposed to do. 16 minutes past the hour.
This is Tom Hartman.
The Tom Hartman Program, where smart people get their news.
Of stocking 21 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Well, let's see. Back in 2004, John McCain said, and I quote, "Without privatization, I don't see how you can possibly, over time, make sure that young Americans are able to receive Social Security benefits." In 2005, when Bush laid out a plan to privatize Social Security, McCain described himself as, quote, "a big booster," end quote, of Bush's plan. In 2008, in the Wall Street Journal, in an interview with the Wall Street Journal, he said, "As part of Social Security reform, I believe that private savings accounts are a part of it, along the lines that President Bush proposed." And then yesterday, he got called out on it, and he said,
"But I'm not for, quote, privatizing Social Security. I never have been. I never will."
Yeah. Will the real John McLean please stand up? Oh, he's over there. No, he's over there. Oh, no, he's over there. No, he's over there. Oh, good heavens. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Jim in San Luis Obispo. Hey, Jim.
Tom, first of all, I want to thank you for being on the radio. You don't know how refreshing
Jim,
it is to have somebody who's unashamedly erudite to listen to and reads history. And thank you for calling Scalia what he is. If you look at his speeches, and he very seldom talks about legal philosophy and the like. It's always a political philosophy. He's got an agenda. Talk about activist judges. But yeah, that's not the reason I called. I tried to get through yesterday, and I, for the life of me, I don't know why we aren't calling the conservatives borrow and spend conservatives. I'd like to see.
Oh, I've been calling that forever.
I know, but why aren't the politicians? And why isn't McCain asked to answer what he wants to do with the $1.3 trillion debt to the Central Bank of China? We're looking to commies, the evil empire of Reagan's words, to finance our country. I mean, isn't there something wrong with this? And what's he going to do?
Yeah, there.
Of course, the problem is, I think, that neither candidate can address it because there are only two answers. One, cutting spending, and the only place to really cut spending is the Pentagon. Or number two, raise taxes. And those are both third rails of politics. So I think the problem is partially us. We won't let politicians do that.
Part of it also, Jim, and thank you very much for the call. And Chris, just as a heads up in New York, I had to turn on the Comrex to hear Jim. I'm not hearing anything come back on the ISDN line. The real problem here is, I think you properly identified, as a lack of political courage. And you go back to Walter Mondale saying, you know, I'll raise your taxes. Reagan says he won't, but he will too. And Reagan did, sure enough. And you know, we have to get to a time in the United States where we're willing to talk honestly about what's going on, where our politicians are willing to talk honestly. Mike in Pemberton, New Jersey. Hey, Mike.
Yeah, this is actually Mike Sark, Tom. How are you?
I'm well. How are you, Mike?
I'm doing well. I just came back from a McCain town hall, and actually this topic came up, but a lot of other interesting stuff happened, too.
Yeah.
So I'll try to be quick. On this topic, he said, don't let them fool you into thinking I'm for privatizing Social Security. I'm for allowing young people to keep a portion of their money in their own accounts.
I mean, oh, wait a minute. Isn't that what privatizing means?
Hey, listen, I don't know. He said, what we need to do is we need to get a commission the way Ronald Reagan did, sat down with, I forget who it was he mentioned, Tip O'Neill and somebody else.
Yeah, actually it was Daniel Patrick Moynihan and Alan Greenspan.
What he didn't mention is that they doubled our taxes when they sat down and spent all that money anyway. They just added it to the general revenues and spent it all anyway. But other interesting stuff, after he got all the, he wasn't wearing a flag lapel pin. I thought that was interesting. But I was wearing a flag lapel pin, so when he was all done and saying goodbye to everyone, I walked up to him, and I was able to get some face time with him. And I asked him if I could give him my flag lapel pin, and he let me pin it on him. And while I had my hands on him, he said, you know, I spent 4 years in the Marines. He says, well, thank you for your service. I said, you know, our motto is always faithful in the Marines. Something else, always faithful. He says, yes, I know that. I said, well, have you always been faithful to Cindy McCain? Because his campaign got really angry when the New York Times reported about that Vicky Eisman thing.
Yeah,
but McCain's never said anything about it. So I tried to get him on the record, and he said, you know what, our campaign's not going to be about that. I want you to know, though, that I've got a son in Iraq. And he really had a kind of dough-in-the-headlights look. I wish somebody in our press would grow a pair and hold this candidate to the same standards they held, say, Bill Clinton to.
Yeah. You know, that's the there's really two sides to that, Mike, and I know that you know this as well, that on the one hand, it was, you and I think are agreeing that it was inappropriate that they hold Bill Clinton to that standard, and so then why would we hold...
But if you're going to do it...
Right. You know, I don't know where McCain was on impeachment, frankly. I'd have to go back and look at the record on the impeachment of Clinton, but I frankly would much rather see the campaign... debated on the actual issues issues.
You and I would both like that. I would like to live in an America where everyone paid attention to this, that nobody paid attention to salaciousness.
Right.
It's unfortunate, but the media has recognized it's the salacious that sells.
No, I got it, Mike. I absolutely got it. We're out of time here at the bottom of the hour, but you know, interesting that you got that response. Very interesting. 27 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Show. 866-303-2270. We'll be back with your calls after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
I think we've figured out, welcome back, 34 minutes past the hour, I think we've figured out how to deal with right-wing prime ministers and presidents who don't like the idea of privacy. Our Berlusconi alert for the day. Yes, yeah, Silvio Berlusconi, the guy, the small-time crook and... right-wing small businessman who then bought a radio station and then bought a TV station and then bought a newspaper and then bought another radio station and then another TV station and another newspaper, another radio station, pretty soon bought a radio network and then a TV network and then another TV network and then another radio network, and pretty soon he owned about 90% of all the media, newspapers, radio and television in Italy, and then ran for prime minister, and surprise, surprise, he won 2 terms. And then he got bounced out last time around. And you know why? Well, last time around he got bounced out because, in part, because he got wiretapped. And he was taped complaining that anyone working for the Italian state broadcasting company, this is their equivalent of NPR, and a rival, by the way, of his media set television network, must either be left-wing or has to prostitute himself. This is what he said. So last week... He announced that he is going to ban, now that he's back in power, he just won his third term. He's back in power in Italy, and he has announced that he is going to ban the use of wiretaps in police investigations after it emerged that 3 million Italians are spied on by the police every year. So, you know, I guess what's good for the goose is good for the gander, or isn't, or whatever. Maybe if some... You know, if Bush were waterboarded, he'd change his opinion on waterboarding. Or if he were wiretapped, he'd change his opinion on wiretaps. Maybe that's the way to do it, right? Let's do it the Berlusconi way. Our Berlusconi alert for the day. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number, TomHartman.com for our live chat room, AirAmerica.com for all stuff Air America. And Janelle in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, listening to WPTT. Hey, Janelle, what's up?
Hey, I just wanted to mention a few things, specifically about the fact that the right / Fox Noise / everybody else seems to now think it's cute to attack Michelle Obama.
Yeah.
I think that just might be what brings women in tidal waves over to Barack.
I hope
so. Meaning, specifically, you attack Michelle and make her seem like the exact thing that Hillary was complaining that they were making her into, the victim, the woman who's getting beat up by the guys. I see this as an exceedingly opportune time for Hillary to come out of wherever she's vacationing at, justifiably right now, on stage with Michelle, with Oprah, Chelsea, Maria Shriver, Caroline Kennedy, and anybody else that wants to stand up hand in hand with Michelle, say a few things on the microphone, and womanhood and sisterhood are united right on the stage for everybody to see it, talk about it and come out against it, and just do a whole womanhood tour. Sisterhood tour through the United States. I can't believe the right to see this comment. Are they crazy?
Yeah.
Are they nuts? And the whole thing is, too, I think that the Republican message to women is you are to be seen and not heard.
Yeah.
Do you notice how Cindy, the ever meek and fragile Cindy McCain, is always a step behind and a step to the side of John McCain when he comes out?
Yeah.
You know,
she's
and,
a good Republican wife.
Yeah, right? Stepford wife. And then the whole thing is, like, her... There is a screaming Pandora's box of John McCain's past with his first wife. And I learned this from Lynn Cullen here in Pittsburgh, that while he was in Vietnam, his wife was in a horribly disfiguring car accident, 23 surgeries and whatnot, which left her disfigured. He left her when he got back to the United States.
Yeah. And within a few months
within 1 month was married.
Yeah.
To Cindy.
Right.
Now,
who
I think there's women
who was
that.
Attractive and worth $100 million.
And I bet
nice combination.
Women knew that, specifically angry Hillary women that want to be respected and heard. If they heard that that's how their, alternate choice for voting this November, if that's how he treats women, and then, you know, there's, like I said, Cindy back in the shadows behind John, smiling with her hands clasped in front of her, like Donna Reed, I think when women calm down a little bit and sit down and take a look at what's going on, they're going to notice that there's no way on earth that they could possibly conceive to vote for John McCain. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And his you know, thank you, Janelle. Very well said. I appreciate the call. He also, his Supreme Court decisions, he's talking about even in cases of rape and incest, abortion should be illegal, that birth control should not be available. I mean, he's supported those kinds of positions. I mean, these are the kind of crackpots, Scalia-type crackpots that are going to end up on the Supreme Court if John McCain becomes our president. It would be an absolute disaster for women in this country, in my humble opinion. Linda in Cleveland, Ohio. Hey, Linda.
Yes. Hi, Tom. I have a comment and a question I had hoped to ask Bernie, but here it is. Some Democrats seem to feel relief that Karl Rove is not involved in this 2008 election cycle, but I believe he is.
He is. He's an informal advisor to John McCain.
Right. Well, several months ago, a woman called into an NPR program and had heard Karl Rove asked about stealing the last two presidential elections. And his answer was that you ain't seen nothing yet. And she said it gave her creepy chills.
Oh, man. Yeah. That's like Congressman Peter King, the Republican from New York, Nancy Pelosi's daughter. I'm forgetting her first name, but she made this little kind of home video of the 2004 campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And she was at a party on Election Day. Is there 4, 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the afternoon? The polls weren't quite closed yet. And Peter King was there, and he was at this celebration party for the Republicans, and he was drunk as a skunk. And she's got this on videotape. I mean, you can find it all over the web. And she says, how do you think the vote's going to go, or how's the election going to go? Actually, I've even got the audio of it here. I can dig it out. And he says, we'll take care of the counting, or words to that effect. In other words, we've got this thing under control. Don't worry. I'm totally creeped out by it. Linda, thank you for the call. And in fact, during the next break, I'll dig that audio out and share it with you, because it was totally weird. Pete in San Francisco, listening on Green 960. Hey, Pete.
Hello.
You're on the air.
Yes.
You were on the air. I don't know what happened. His cell phone died. Andrew says apparently. Bernice in Dearborn, Michigan. Hey, Bernice.
Hi, Tom. I'm calling about Justice Scalia's behavior.
Yeah.
He's a Catholic, and I understand he's also a member of Opus Dei.
That's the rumor, and that he and Thomas and Roberts and, not Kennedy, but Well, at least those three are also members are followers of a particularly right-wing Catholic priest in Washington, D.C.
And then I understand that Justice Scalia wears a kind of hair shirt under his cloak, and members of Opus Dei perform self-punishing acts in order to increase their holiness.
Yes.
And I'm just furious at his behavior. I mean, what kind of holiness is it when he is, you know, immune to what's happening with man's inhumanity to man?
Yeah, so your point, Bernice, is that his behavior is contradicting his own Catholicism?
Absolutely.
I agree, and I think, you know, it's very strange. Yesterday, our president met, or the guy who has the title of our president, met with the current Pope, Benedict, and was given a set of pictures or books about the Sistine Chapel or something like that. When I met Pope John Paul II, he gave me a rosary. I think the modern Catholic Church, and John Paul II spoke about this passionately. He was passionately opposed to capital punishment. He was passionately in favor of human rights. He was passionately opposed to our invading Iraq. Pope Benedict, I don't know his politics well enough to speak about them, and I've not met him, but, you know, I would say to the extent that Scalia is being consistent with Catholic teachings, he's about 1,000 years off. He's consistent with Catholic teachings, during the Inquisition, you know, 700 years off. But it's not what I saw in Rome or in, so anyway, Bernice, thank you for the call.
Good to
hear from you. I appreciate it. Dan in San Diego. Hey, Dan, what's up?
Oh, yesterday Christy Harvey mentioned Katrina and a bunch of goods being stored in the warehouse that people needed that were never distributed.
Yep.
And that reminded me of Myanmar. After the cyclone hit there, you know, there were relief goods that hadn't been distributed. And, you know, you also had aid that was turned back, or people were forced to stay where they were instead of being allowed to leave to go seek refuge or whatever. And there were also forced relocations. And then they brought out photo ops, you know, to, you know, show the world, see how well things are going. And, you know, and I thought about that, and it, you know, it struck me as this is exactly what happened during Katrina.
Yeah, it is.
And one thing nobody mentions is the first day, I don't know if you noticed, the first day that the cyclone hit, Bush probably realized those same parallels, and he was too chicken to, you know, come out and say anything. So he hid behind Laura's skirt and sent her out to talk about, you know, how bad things were and so on and so forth.
You're right. She was the person who spoke about that, and I'll bet you're right that he did that way because they were concerned that it would evoke, you know, the ghosts of Katrina. Good point, Dan. Thank you. That's interesting. I hadn't considered it in that context, but it makes perfect sense. 45 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Show. 866-303-2270, our phone number, tomhartman.com, airamerica.com. We'll be right back.
Tom Hartman.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Number of U.S. homeowners swept up in the housing crisis. This from Realty Track, a company that tracks foreclosures, rose further last month. One in every 483 U.S. households, one in every 483 homes received a foreclosure filing in the month of May. Just in the month of May. It's incredible. Anyhow, Yvonne in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Yvonne, what's on your mind today?
Hi, I have not heard it mentioned, and I was eager to share this with our senator from Vermont, but we have trillions of cubic meters of natural gas under the ground up at the North Slope at Prudhoe Bay.
Right.
I spent my professional life as a scientist with the U.S. Department of Energy. I've been there many times. And by law, that oil, when extracted, comes out with natural gas as an attendant product.
Sure.
It could not be flared as it is in the Middle East.
Right.
It was pumped back under. It's owned by the oil and gas industry. And nobody says a word about it, yet they want to drill in Anwar.
Yeah, well, this is what Peter DeFazio was talking about in the show a couple days ago, is that the oil and gas companies are sitting on over 30, as I recall, million acres of federal land that they have leased for gas and oil exploration, which is known to have oil and gas under it.
Right.
And they're doing absolutely nothing. They're not drilling for it. They're not pulling it out. Apparently, they're waiting for the price to go higher. This is a form of speculation.
Yes.
And at the same time, they're begging to get into Anwar because that oil and gas is going to be very profitable, too. They're just trying to get everything they can right now in the midst of the panic, as long as they got a Republican in the White House.
Well, and in addition to the oil and gas leases, on which they pay no royalties until a product is produced.
And then it's only 12.5%.
They also have leases on the coal seams that underlay our public lands.
Right.
And they
right.
are just sitting on those.
Yep.
So when, indeed, as naturally will happen, the oil runs out, then they'll probably turn to sea salt plants and make fuel from coal.
Yeah, I think. Thank you, Yvonne. Excellent point. I think that one of the things that we're seeing right now is the reality of peak oil. I think it's here, and it's starting to sink in. People are starting to figure it out. Speaking of speculation, Kim in San Francisco, you wanted to weigh in on that topic.
Hey, Tom.
Kim.
I'm just an average American, and I have been trying to understand deregulation and mostly speculation. And I think Bernie this morning got it absolutely right when he said, okay, the energy, the speculation and the energy and oil field, about three people understand it.
Right.
And you know what it reminded me of, Tom, is I get these disclaimers from, like, in my case, Morgan Stanley and home and car insurance, bank and credit cards. I mean, I get these little disclaimers, and they are written to, I'm pretty sure they are written to more or less confuse me, and it's written
sure.
because somebody said you have to. I know, that's
yeah.
paranoid. Somebody said you have to inform the consumer. And so they send them out, but they make them so convoluted that the average person can't understand
well,
them.
Well, let me even add something to that, Kim. I remember back in the must have been the 90s, I was CEO of an ad agency, and I was doing trainings for companies on marketing and advertising. And one of the things that was part of our training was how when typographically, if you want to cut in half the speed with which somebody reads something and also cut in half the number of people who will actually read it, put it in all caps, because we recognize words by their shape. And when a word is in all capital letters, it has no shape. It becomes a box. And so it makes it very difficult to read text in all caps. And I noticed I got a mortgage during one of those years, and I noticed that there were two paragraphs in the mortgage that were in all caps. And
wow.
I got curious, and I tracked back and found that there was actually a legislation that was passed requiring those two paragraphs, which were long disclosures basically of how the mortgage company had me by the throat, and they could close the mortgage down anytime they wanted. They could pull the mortgage with 60 days notice. They could just, you know, utterly destroy us, right? That there was legislation passed saying that language had to be in the contract in all caps. And in fact, it was the industry itself that had lobbied for that. In other words, they wanted to make that language even harder to read.
I see. I just thought maybe I was being over paranoid, but
no, they're very thoughtful about this stuff.
Okay, so here's what I want to say, and I know it's simplistic, but before, you know, there have been Democrats in Congress that have gone along with this deregulation of industries,
yeah,
without seeming the slightest understanding of how these industries, like speculators in markets and various markets and the investment community and everything else, how they can be manipulated by people who know how when the Congress themselves, even our Democrats, don't know what can be done with it.
Well, part of the problem is they've been believing. I mean, you know, Milton Friedman started this thing, the Chicago School, you know, this back in the 50s in a
right.
big way, or 60s. And Tom Friedman is from Friedman to Friedman, is the most recent advocate of it with his books, The World is Flat and The Olive Tree and the Lexus. And in The Olive Tree and the Lexus, he uses the Lexus as this great example of how world free trade works. But the reality is that the Lexus is made by Toyota. And Toyota used to be, in the 1950s and 60s, it was called the Toyota, with a D, not a T, Toyota Loom Company. They made weaving equipment to make cloth.
Wow.
And they decided to go into the car industry, and MITI, the Ministry of Industry and Transport in Japan, funded them with hundreds of millions of dollars in subsidies. The Japanese government put up an import tariff to prevent competing cars from being imported into Japan. They protected their exports. They subsidized their exports. The Lexus is a perfect example of government helping domestic industries dominate the economies of other countries. And Tom Friedman says, oh, well, this is a great example of free trade. No, it's the great example of the opposite of free trade. It's how successful Ford and GM could have been if we hadn't gone to free trade and instead we had said, we're going to protect our domestic auto industry. I mean, this, Kim, thank you for the call. I got to move along here. It's the top of the hour, but it's the problem that so many of these politicians have is they have no training in basic economics. And then you've got these cheerleaders out there like Tom Friedman, the billionaire, and Milton Friedman, now deceased, the economist, for basically corporatism. Anything Goes Friday. Back with your calls after the news.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Call Tom at 866-303-2270. Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity.
Tom Hartman.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Like, I guess you didn't know who I was. Welcome back. Oh, man. I'm going to pick up your phone calls in just a second here. First, I just have to share with you our conservative alert for the day. Mike Stark called earlier. He confronted Senator McCain about his infidelity, and McCain suggested, well, he wasn't going to talk about that. And I raised the question with Mike. You know, I don't know where McCain stood on the Clinton impeachment, and maybe he's not a hypocrite, or maybe he is. Well, tip of the hat to a number of folks, actually, who sent me various links to this. The statement by Senator John McCain on Friday, February 12th, 1999. Mr. Chief Justice, I intend to vote to convict the President of the United States on both articles of impeachment. This is John McCain. He said, if he thwarted justice, this being Bill Clinton, if he thwarted justice, he did so for the perfectly understandable and forgivable purpose of keeping hidden an embarrassing personal shortcoming that, were it discovered, would harm only not only his family and his reputation, but would not impair our system of government. This, too, is an appealing rationalization. He's citing the Democratic response. He says, this, too, is an appealing rationalization for acquittal, but it is just that, a rationalization. Nowhere in the Constitution or in the expressed views of our founders are crimes intended to conceal the president's character flaws distinguished from crimes intended to subvert democracy. In other words, if somebody lies about their sex life and they're in political office, that is as impeachable, according to John McCain, as somebody lying about whether or not they are destroying the Constitution, whether or not they're shredding the Constitution. So I guess I owe Mike Stark a tip of the hat. So good on you, Mike. Oh, my. Harvey in Berkeley, California. Hey, Harvey, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Well, I have an idea to help slow global warming while helping to save our fine tradesmen and women money.
Yeah.
And it's a, you know, millions of people make their living as carpenters, plumbers, and electricians, and they rely on these flatbed trucks to earn their living. And companies like WeatherGuard and NAC, makers of aluminum, steel, and plastic truck saddle box trucks, saddle boxes, are used to hold tools. And a lot of today's tools are battery-powered, like cordless electric drills, nailers, jigsaws, screwdrivers, planters, and staplers, to name a few. And my idea is to put a photovoltaic surface on these boxes and call them solar saddle boxes. And
that's a great idea.
And they have a deep cycle battery inside the box, which is always being charged up by the box's solar electric surface.
Right.
Because most of these trucks spend most of their time outdoors, they're always being charged up, and they're especially good for off-grid locations. And the photovoltaic surface can be vacuum deposited onto the aluminum or steel box tops.
Yeah, I know.
Or there's a company called Unisolar.com, UNISOLAR.com, and they make a flexible, super strong solar cell that can take a lot of punishment, and I believe could be put on the boxes. And since millions of tools are normally plugged into the grid, using these solar electric saddle boxes would save tons and tons of greenhouse gases,
yeah,
and as well as reduce the stress on the grid, and as well as gas prices being so high, with the coming of the flatbed electric trucks, these solar electric saddle boxes can also be used to power the vehicles as well as the tools. So I say solar electric saddle boxes. Let's get solar.
There you go. Brilliant, Harvey. If you haven't patented it, probably somebody is scurrying to the patent office right now. Good on you. Great suggestion. Kevin in Johnson City, Tennessee. Hey, Kevin, what's up?
Hi. I wanted to mention the fact about Barack Obama's some of the slander that's been going around in the media about him, and kind of compare it to what's been going, like what happened in the past with Gore, and what interesting about Kerry.
Yeah.
I mean, for example, I kind of long for the days when the worst you could be called was a flip flopper,
mm-hmm.
or when liberal was a four letter word, and now they're calling Barack. There's been a lot of innuendo regarding his race,
yeah,
regarding possible Muslim ties. I mean, it's outrageous.
Yeah. Yeah.
And some of the worst things I've heard regarding him is like referencing his speaking style to that of Hitler, and some of the excitement on the part of the people who have nominated him. Sorry, virtually in the primaries,
yeah.
Have
referred. Yeah, if he's a good speaker, then he's like Hitler. If he's a bad speaker, I mean, no matter what the bottom line, Kevin, is no matter what he does, no matter what he says, they're going to criticize him. They're going to cast aspersions on him. They're going to try to racially hypercharacterize him. They're going to try to politically hypercharacterize him. Yesterday, Pat Buchanan on one of the political shows was talking about how he's exotic. And fortunately, there were a couple of people on the show who said, what the hell do you mean by that, Pat? You know, is that code for he's black? Because it is. I mean, let's just put it right out there. It is. Exotic is a word that is used typically in reference to things like cats. It's an exotic species. Louise happens to have one. You know, back four generations ago, we have five cats in our house. Four or five generations ago, whatever, there's a little bit of jungle cat in one of her cats. And, yeah, I mean, it's a regular breed now, but it's whatever it is, it's exotic. And so Pat tries to, soft shoe it. Oh, well, I'm talking about his position on the issues or what he said. No, come on. We get that. We get that. These racists are going to be peddling their racism as hard and as fast as they can, and among other things. Anyhow, Charles in Saginaw, Michigan. Hey, Charles.
Am I on, Tom?
You certainly are. You're on the air.
Hey, I live on a busy road up here in Saginaw, Michigan,
mm-hmm.
and I've noticed in the last couple of years that we have Department of Homeland Security cars that patrol. They look just like undercover cop cars.
Mm-hmm.
And I went and visited my relatives in Indiana, and they have the same thing. And I've wondered if those cop cars pull me over, or if they come to my house and say, you're coming with me,
right,
under whose authority do they come? Are they a federal government?
Yeah, it would be. DHS is a federal agency. DHS is actually, I mean, the FBI is now under the Department of Homeland Security. Or no, wait a minute. I think they are. It's all under the Justice Department, which is, the cabinet branch.
Okay, but this is my point. Hmm. If we send our troops to a foreign country, and they put a gun in someone's face and say, you're going to Guantanamo, or I'm going to turn you over to a government that's going to torture you.
Right.
Wouldn't those captives have the right to say, under whose authority are you depriving me of my liberty? If they say, I'm taking you under the authority of the government of the people, by the people, for the people, then they should get the protections of that government. They should have to follow those rules.
Yeah, Charles, I think you're raising, and thank you for doing so, you're raising this larger issue of, are we becoming a police state? I mean, let's just use the language. Let's just lay out the words. Is the United States becoming a police state? And I am very concerned about the hyper-militarization of our police forces. We see that the Department of Defense is now selling military surplus equipment. Good for contractors. Hey, buy some more and then sell the stuff to local police departments at a discount. We've got police departments that have SWAT team. As I recall, we did a show on this about 6 months ago, and my recollection is that one person, once a day, somebody's home is attacked, and they have absolutely nothing to do with anything. You know, SWAT team comes in, crashes down the door, drags them off, and it was the wrong house. I mean, once a day somewhere in the United States on average. And people die in these attacks from time to time. I mean, it's like, are we becoming hyper-militarized? And in fact, This is interesting. You know, under the terror bill, under the various pieces of terrorist legislation, or so-called anti-terrorist legislation that the Bush administration has passed, any of us can be arrested and held in Guantanamo forever. Now, this is what the Supreme Court rolled back yesterday, but nonetheless, this from today's Financial Times. Controversy over new UK anti-terror powers deepened yesterday with the surprise resignation of a senior opposition politician who pledged to make his fight for re-election on a referendum on civil liberties. Now, oddly enough, it's the Conservatives in the United Kingdom, not the Labour Party. It's the Conservatives who are opposed to this new piece of legislation. This new legislation, which Gordon Brown is pushing, the Prime Minister, the new law extends the time police, I'm quoting from the Financial Times, extends the time police will be able to hold and question terror suspects without charge from 28 days to 42 days. Now, Bush has got people held for 6 years without charge. The UK, the entire government is melting down right now over whether the government should be able to hold a terror suspect 48 days instead of 28 days without charge. And Bush says, and Scalia says, and Roberts says, and Thomas says, oh, we should be able to hold you for 6 years without charge. In fact, in his dissent, Scalia or Roberts goes into this thing about, you know, why are we even hearing this case? These people have not exhausted their legal remedies. Well, they can't in their lifetime. 15 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
The Tom Hartman Program, your radio support group for We the People.
Minutes past the hour. You know, the last I checked, it was considered at the very least bad form for somebody with a national platform to call for the murder of another American. The last I checked, free speech was one of our high values. The last I checked, Americans talking to other Americans was just fine. This Michael Reagan on his radio show.
A job.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And that they should rethink why they're fighting.
Let me back it up here a little bit. This
first letter from my dad and my mom never got.
Anyway,
you're waiting for a mail call, and hopefully you get one. Well, what's going to be going on mail calls a little bit different now. They're going to be getting mail, but they're not going to be care packages. There is a group that's sending letters to our troops in Iraq and DVDs claiming 9/11 was an inside job.
Okay. Now, that group doesn't have the right of free speech. I mean, and by the way, just listen to this. There's a difference, as I said, between condemning somebody's actions I mean, it's like, you know, the people who stand, who show up at the military funerals, you know, with the gays, God hates fags. It's a typographical error, of course. They haven't read the Bible correctly. God condemns figs three times in the Bible. You can, GodHatesFigs.com, you can find out all about it. But, you know, they have the right to free speech, right? But, and is anybody calling for their murder? Not that I know of. Listen to this, Michael Reagan.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And that they should rethink why they're fighting.
Yeah, you should rethink why you're fighting.
They ought to take these, excuse me, folks, I'm going to say this. We ought to find the people who are doing this, take them out, and shoot them. Really. Just find the people who are sending those letters to our troops to demoralize our troops and do what they're doing. You take them out, they are traitors to this country, and shoot them. You have a problem with that? Deal with it. But anybody who would do that doesn't deserve to live. You shoot them. You call them traitors, that's what they are, and you shoot them dead. I'll pay for the bullet. Mark Dice, the founder of The Resistance, which he calls a media watchdog group, says that the U.S. government was responsible for the September...
And he goes off on the rant. It's MarkDice.com, by the way, for the information about this. But here he is. He's calling for the murder of this guy. This is Michael Reagan. I'm astounded. And horrified, particularly when this nation has suffered so much from right-wing zealots or just crackpots in general going off on assassination rants, that of all people, Michael Reagan, the son of a president who suffered an assassination attempt, would say that people should be running around America shooting other people because of their political opinions. Because of what they're saying to people. How sick and twisted is this? That's just, it just blows my mind. Anyhow, back to your calls here. JT in Costa Mesa, California, listening on K-Talk. Hey, JT, what's up?
Great, Tom. Hey, I just wanted to actually kind of make a string of points here. You and Senator, we're speaking this morning about advertising on headline news by these oil rigging platforms like, oh, say, Kerr McGee.
Right.
And Boeing and Lockheed Martin advertising to the U.S. citizenry who can't buy any of the products that they make.
Right.
So why are they advertising?
Right. And the same thing, by the way, with Archer's Daniel Midland and other big agribusinesses sponsoring National Public Radio, who, you know, and it was, keep in mind, it was NPR more than a decade and a half ago that exposed ADM's price fixing, which led to, as I recall, a $300 million fine against them. And now they're the sponsor. And now, surprise, NPR is no longer doing investigative reporting.
Exactly. And I think your response nailed it right on the head. I think they're trying to influence via advertising. Hey, don't play that segment because we're not going to advertise with our big dollars anymore.
That's right.
I'd like to take it one step further and have people ask themselves a question. And I take it right down to GM, British Petroleum, Royal Dutch Shell. They're all doing these advertisements to the American citizenry. That is, we are so vested in finding alternative energies and so on. Just do a little investigation, and you'll find that it's definitely on its head. The amount of money they actually spend on this R&D versus the amount of money they spend advertising that they do R&D. What is the real motivation here? To let you all think they're doing a lot of R&D?
Right, and then the pharmaceutical companies, you know, we're America's pharmaceutical research companies, and by the way, if you can't afford to pay for your drugs, we'll pay for your drugs. And again, I would bet, you know, thanks for your point, well made, JT. I remember back years ago, there was it wasn't an expose really, it was just isn't this fascinating, as I recall, it was an advertising age, about American Express was doing this big campaign, and this is not the pick on them, it's just a point of how it works. They were doing this big campaign about how you can, you know, wherever you go, if you lose your traveler's checks, you can get a refund. And the article noted that they had spent more money on the advertising campaign than they did on the refunds. You know, that's fine, actually, because I don't see a big toxic effect to people buying traveler's checks. But there is a toxic effect to melting down the atmosphere. There is a toxic effect to war. And for those things to be in, for those industries to be influencing our media, yeah, I got a problem with it. I overall have a problem with it. Well said. 866-303-2270, our telephone number, TomHartmann.com, AirAmerica.com. You can check out our live video cam. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Four minutes past the hour. Well, time for a full Monty alert. I don't know. Here it is.
David, take off your coat.
Yeah.
Real slow.
You know, the presidential race is in full swing, as they say.
David, take off your shoes. I'll take your shoes.
New York City entrepreneur has decided to have some fun with this and make some money.
Baby, take off your dress. Yes, yes, yes.
Company's called Practice Safe Policy.
Yeah, leave your hat on.
Yeah, leave your hat on. Well, see, what they're selling is McCain and Obama condoms. The Obama condom carries the slogan, used with good judgment. The McCain version says, old but not expired. Yeah, well, what can you say after that? 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Speaking of old but not expired, Leon in the Bronx. You wanted to talk about McCain and don't pick on his age?
Hey, how you doing?
Great. What's up?
I just think it's a bad idea for us to go after him as an older person that Marines. I mean, his policies are wrong. That's the main reason to go after that.
I agree. I don't think that you've heard me attack his age, although I will say that I'm going to attack his age right now, and I'll tell you why, Leon. I am seeing John McCain increasingly incoherent. I mean, he's startlingly coherent He's doing a great job for a guy in his 70s. But he forgets from day to day what he's talking about. He didn't know the difference between Sunni and Shia. He didn't know that Al-Qaeda was not being trained in Iran. And then when Joe Lieberman corrected him, 2 hours later, he got it wrong again. The next day, he got it wrong again. So at a certain point, you have to say, either this guy, you know, I guess by using age, what we're doing is actually cutting him some slack. Either he's getting a little old, or he's just a very prolific liar. And I guess you could take the choice on those. Jenny in Los Angeles. Hey, Jenny. Jenny, you are on the air.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. My eyes are still bugged out from that story about Michael Reagan and his fatwa. That's just,
yeah.
I mean, who died and left him Ayatollah? That's just bizarre.
I agree. And you heard it in his own voice.
That's what I love about your show, is that it's not just so-and-so said. You actually hoist them by their own petard. In any case, I love that this morning, at the top of your show, someone called in to point out that Mr. Bush needed to characterize the Supreme Court decision on habeas corpus in Guantanamo as being a deeply divided 4-5 court, blah, blah, blah. In any case, and that he didn't feel that it was deeply divided when they installed him. What I'm curious about, because I could Google this, but I'd rather ask you, is it the same 4-5? Has personnel changed?
People have changed. Sandra Day O'Connor has been replaced by Alito, and she voted for Bush v. Gore, and Alito voted for the, you know, he was the minority, the four who said, no, please torture people, please hang on to people. He did not vote for the Constitution. And Rehnquist, who was the Chief Justice, who also voted in favor of Bush v. Gore and voted on George Bush's side, has been replaced by John Roberts, who also joined the dissenting opinion. So, it's the same 5-4. It's actually not the same 5-4 split, because Kennedy is the swing vote in this case. It was considered that Sandra Day O'Connor was the swing vote in Bush v. Gore. And Kennedy went on the side of the Constitution in this case. So I think the circumstances are a little different. But the irony of George Bush depreciating a 5-4 decision when he is only
exactly.
sitting in that office by virtue of one is mind-boggling. Yeah, well
I
said.
Know.
Jenny, thank you very much for the call. It's great to hear from you. Rebecca in Humboldt County, California. Hey, Rebecca.
Hi. Regarding the issue of whether or not a president in the past or president in the future has cheated on a spouse,
right.
and whether it's anyone else's business.
Yeah.
I used to feel that it was not anyone else's business but the couple involved. Mm-hmm. But my husband pointed out to me that when one gets married, one stands in front of, you know, friends, family, representative of God, and promises, vows, to be faithful to only one person. And if someone is going to break that promise, how can we trust any other oath they ever make?
Well, that was the argument that
that
was the argument that the Republicans made over and over and over again during the impeachment proceedings. And the simple fact of the matter is, as the people of the United States, first of all, if that's your criteria, then Dwight Eisenhower shouldn't have been president because he had a girlfriend on the side for 20 years. Jack Kennedy shouldn't have been president. Franklin Roosevelt died with his girlfriend. Shouldn't have been president. I mean, probably half the presidents of the United States explicitly that we know of shouldn't have been president because they had girlfriends on the side. They're number one. And number two, as a citizen of the United States, I would rather know what somebody's policies are. That's why I said to Mike, you know, when he called, I said, you know, I think I'd really rather go after McCain and his policies. But if McCain is going to say, as you have said, that this is a standard by which we should judge somebody politically, then I think that he should be willing to be judged by that standard. And,
Absolutely. So
Rebecca, thanks for the call. But had he not said that, I would probably be defending McCain's right to privacy on this, because I think it's really time for us to put that kind of stuff behind us. Robert in Gig Harbor, Washington. Hey, Robert.
Hello, Tom. It's a great honor to speak with you.
Thank you.
And are you there, Tom?
I am. Thank you.
Great. What I wanted to say is that you got me thinking about the religious rights backing of this administration, and it reminded me of Proverbs chapter 6, verse 16 through 19, which describes the Bush administration in spades. It's amazing how Solomon knew this thousands of years ago, but this is everything that the Bush administration is. There are six things the Lord hates, seven which are detestable to him, and then the first was haughty eyes, and it reminded me of the Cindy Sheehan quote that you played out again when she's talking about Mickey Herskowitz about Bush. I've got all this political capital, and I'm not going to squander it. Or a lying tongue. Well, we don't have to explore that too much. You know, Saddam was behind 9/11. Or the shedding of innocent blood, how many Iraqi civilians have died. Feet that are swift to rush to do evil. Bam, 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 Iran. And it's, again, a false witness who pours out lies. God hates lies so much. He mentions it twice in the same package. So, I like this one. One who stirs up dissent among his brothers. Yeah, I'm a uniter, not a divider.
Robert, you make a great case that George Bush is the Antichrist. Thank you. Well done. Proverbs 6. Check it out. Let's see here. David in Asheville, North Carolina. Hey, David, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, Tom. I'm an independent, and I don't have a home. I listen to the right. I listen to the left. I get a lot of my news from both, and I try to remain educated by listening to both sides. The reason why I'm an independent is some glaring things. One recent case involving the Supreme Court and eminent domain in that New London, Connecticut case.
Yeah.
Neither the Republicans or the Democrats or the right or the left seems to be overly concerned that the Supreme Court did what they did. But primarily the reason why I'm an independent is that neither the left or the right or Republicans or Democrats recognize a thing called the public duty doctrine. And educators, state-approved textbooks, nobody discloses this vital information to the public. Are you familiar with the public duty doctrine?
I am not.
Please look it up, and I'm asking you from the bottom of my heart to ask Ed to run a program that would probably last a week involving the public duty doctrine.
Okay, public duty doctrine. We'll check it out. and ask, I don't know, Bill in West Covina, California. Hey, Bill.
Hey, Bill. How you doing?
Good.
Well, I just sort of listened to your show yesterday with the libertarian that was on, and you had made a comment, and I just wanted to, because I'm a food safety, third-party food safety auditor and mm-hmm. consultant, been one for 25 years now, and mm-hmm. America has the safest food supply in the world.
And, not according to the South Koreans.
Huh?
You've got 100,000 South Koreans out in the streets marching because they are going to start importing our beef, which is not tested for bovine spongiform encephalopathy, mad cow disease, and we have in the United States right now an epidemic of Alzheimer's. It's the sixth leading cause of death in the United States. Startling onset of this thing over the last 30 years. A disease that virtually didn't exist 50 or 100 years ago in the United States. I mean, look at how all the founders, you know, that lived to ripe old ages, or most of them, and wrote right up until their 70s and 80s, ain't happening anymore in America. And I think, frankly, there's a correlation, and there's absolutely nobody. You know, the federal government makes it actually illegal. There was one for farmers to test their animals for this. When I lived in Vermont, there was a family down the road from us that had sheep, and they wanted to test them for BSE. And the USDA came and took their sheep from them, said, no, you can't do this, and destroyed them. I mean, it's totally bizarre. This farmer up in Washington State, as I recall, who wanted to sell meat into Japan, and they said, no, you can't do this.
Well, Actually, I wasn't going to argue food safety with you. What I was going to argue was that your statement about the FDA, USDA, and the state trying to test a product and think they're going to do the right thing, they haven't. And if you check to see how much they've really stopped and what they've done,
I think I just made your case for you, Bill. I'm not totally disagreeing with you. I think the FDA and the USDA have dropped the ball in a lot of areas, hugely. Thank you very much for the call. 45 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Special thanks so much to Louise Hartman, to my producer Sean Taylor, to Chris Rosen, Lauren Kirshner, Andrew Dunn, Marcus Hellman at Air America, to Sue Nethercutt, the folks in our chat room, and Mike Toth, who does our audio archives on our website, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for listening to our program. Thank you so much. And let me just wrap up my little riff with the caller just before we came into this break, who was suggesting that the USDA has dropped the ball. And I'm agreeing. Americans right across the board want food that is labeled with country of origin or place of origin, for example, number one. Number two, they want to know if there's genetically modified organisms in it. Number three, they want their beef and other animal products to be tested for BSE and for mad cow disease. None of this stuff is happening. But none of this stuff is happening because of the power of the influence of industry. Because we have, over the last 30 years since Reagan came into office, we have surrendered so much of our government functions to lobbyists, basically. Lobbyists have had so much power because our system is so badly broken. Not because government can't do things well, but because government can't do things well in the presence of industry that has elevated itself through the power of lobbying and through the power of money to the point where it has more power than the government itself. That's the problem. And we have to clean up our electoral process. And we have to clean up this whole mess that we have with lobbying in Washington, D.C. And I think Barack Obama's done a huge first step toward that by saying he's not going to take any money from people like that. And that's going to go a long way to starting a clean administration. It'll be a great thing. Ellen Ratner's with us with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, their website. Hey, Ellen, what's going on in the world today?
Well, first of all, back to the Supreme Court decision. As I'm sure you've probably been talking about, Lindsey Graham is now saying he wants a constitutional amendment to prevent habeas corpus.
Yeah, I shouldn't have spoken well of him yesterday. It turns out he is, as Carl Wilson would say, our weasel of the week.
Well, he is weasel of the week, but he's a mixed bag. He really is a mixed bag. He's not one way or the other.
Yeah, well, on this, he's a weasel.
Well, on this, he's terrible.
Habeas corpus, I mean, this goes back to 1215, I mean, in Runnymede, King John.
Yes, and Mukasey is also saying, yesterday he said that he was disappointed in the ruling, and of course the president said that as well. You know,
are they, just a question, Ellen, are these guys, and perhaps you would have a special insight into this, given that your brother brought this case before the Supreme Court, is the Bush administration going to have to react to this, or are they just going to run the clock out and dump this
Michael
in the lap of the next president?
They are absolutely going to run the clock out.
Yeah, so the next president is going to deal with this.
I saw him last night for his birthday dinner, even though his birthday is today, and he believes that they're definitely going to run the clock out, that they will do anything that they can stall, particularly because if these cases come to court, then their enhanced interrogation techniques are really what's going to show up.
Sure. In other words, they will be convicted, and they will discuss the Bush administration officials will be revealed to be essentially war criminals or people who have committed crimes against humanity, and that will be public for the whole world to see. They don't want that to happen.
Certainly not when he's president.
Yeah.
I don't think he wants it at any point.
Right.
There is also, I don't know if you've been shopping lately, but this week I've had a little more time after the Talkers Convention, and so I've gone to a few stores to get things that I haven't been able to get.
Mm-hmm.
And every store, be it a grocery store that I was in this week, a Rite Aid, and just sort of a general department store,
mm-hmm.
every store I was in, the shelves were very, very thin. Like there would be one of something rather than three or four something that there used to be in the olden days.
Hmm.
Like last year, those right. olden days.
Right.
Well, now it looks like the consumer price index is up a half a percentage point in May. That just came out today. And that includes the core CPI only went up 0.2%, but that does not include food and energy. The whole CPI does. And then consumer confidence, surprise, surprise, they have said has dropped sharply, 56.7 in June from 59.8 in May. I mean, that's you know, a 2% drop.
Right,
in one month.
The American people are realizing that the Republican Great Depression of the 1930s, we're in a slow-motion version of it right now in the 21st century.
Absolutely. Okay, several other things going on. A president gave quite a speech today, and he was in Italy. He's now in France. But he is talking, he talked a lot about ideology. He talked about the U.S.-European alliance. He said, ultimately, the only way to defeat the advocates of this ideology, you mean terrorism, is to defeat their ideas. How do you defeat somebody's ideas? Good luck. So the central aim of our foreign policy is to advance a more hopeful and compelling vision. Well, that's very positive, but he hasn't said how he's going to do it.
Well, in fact, it's actually, I agree with that philosophically. What we need to be is the beacon of liberty for the world. I mean, instead, what we've done is we've terrorized people, we've tortured people, we invaded a country that represented no threat to us. We're occupying them 6 years later. We tortured their people in Abu Ghraib. I mean, we have done everything that is the exact opposite of what Bush just suggested.
Absolutely. No question about that. Also, very important piece of news today. The Iraq Prime Minister al-Maliki said today that Iraq diplomats negotiating this long-term security agreement are an impasse over concerns about what? Infringement on Iraqi sovereignty. He was in Jordan when he did this, and he said the first drafts presented left us at a dead end and deadlock. And so we left these first drafts and negotiations were going to continue, but he said that we have got to support Iraq's sovereignty.
Well, the reason why is because if they can get Iraq declared a sovereign nation with whom we have a treaty, a mutual defense treaty, and then they can find one Iranian who they can track back to the Iranian government who blew up one Iraqi soldier, they now have the basis for an attack on Iran.
Well, that's also true, but on the other hand, the Bush administration would like to do this without having to negotiate a treaty.
Yeah, interesting, very interesting. Ellen Radner, Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, I like exactly. Ellen Radner, Talk Radio News Service.
My favorite
word. I know, and you haven't used it today. It's like, what happened?
Okay, I'm going to watch it now.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Ellen. Great talking with you. On Monday, I'll be debating Carrie Lucas of the Independent Women's Forum about deregulating health care, and Rick Perlstein from the Campaign for America's Future is going to drop by about his new book, Nixon Land. And don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. Have a great weekend.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit TomHartmanRadio.com.